August 1964, President Lyndon Baines Johnson was getting ready for a political triumph. Just 1 month after signing the Civil Rights Act into law, Johnson was expecting to be nominated by acclamation as his party's presidential candidate.
For decades, Atlantic City has called itself the nation's playground. Now, however, world focus is on a different type of attraction at Atlantic City, the Democratic National Convention.
It was to be a political coronation of sorts. The only question was who Johnson would choose for vice president. But there was one controversy brewing, the challenge from the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. A delegation of mostly black Mississippians, the Freedom Democrats were seeking the right to represent Mississippi at the convention. They hoped to prove that the regular Mississippi delegation, the all-white Mississippi delegation, had deliberately excluded blacks. The challenge would leave a lasting imprint on the 1964 convention and the future Democratic Party. Unita Blackwell was a member of the Freedom Delegation.
Well, without the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party challenge in 1964, the changes that we have now in 1989, you know, wouldn't have been.
The formation of the Freedom Democratic Party was a bold move, well organized and carefully planned. It had grown out of the arduous effort to register black voters in Mississippi, an effort that had led to numerous arrests, beatings, and even deaths. During the summer of 1964, the Freedom Summer, when hundreds of college students came to Mississippi to help with voter registration, volunteers and local organizers went door to door throughout the state.
Would you be interested in becoming a member of the Freedom Democratic Party?
In order to mount a challenge to the legitimacy of the regular Democrats, the Freedom Party had to gather evidence that blacks had been excluded from the delegate selection process. Aaron Henry was the chairman of the Freedom Democratic Party.
Many blacks were encouraged to try to go to the Democratic Party meetings. And in almost every instance, there was a denial. Either you were turned down flatly, you were told that the meeting was going to be at one place and the meeting was held at another. But, you know, all of this trickery.
One of the most dynamic leaders of the Freedom Democratic Party was the late Fannie Lou Hamer. A sharecropper from Rulesville, Mississippi, she was a powerful speaker and a talented singer. Here, she describes how she tried to get into a meeting of the regular Democrats.
I remember when we tried to attend the precinct meeting at the little polling place in Rulesville. It was eight of us, eight Negroes, went up to visit the precinct meeting, and the door was locked. And we couldn't get in. And we stood on the outside and held our own meeting. We elected our chairman and our secretary, our delegates and our alternates.
All over Mississippi, the process was repeated. Black Mississippians, many of whom had not even dared to think about voting until that summer, were getting firsthand experience in politics. Bob Moses, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee's project director in Mississippi and a leading organizer of the Freedom Democrats, says political education was one of the group's main goals.
In general, the idea was that you take people and you put them into political events, which in and of themselves are important, and you open it up in the sense that people get in there and they don't have to pretend that they know what the process is, right? What they have to do is insist at any point that I don't know, right? And what I need to do is to learn, right? And be open to questions, right, as to what do we do, right? How do we do this? That was the whole process from the beginning in Mississippi. That is, you immerse the people in the political process.
Unita Blackwell, who went on to become the first black woman mayor in Mississippi, got her initial political experience with the Freedom Democrats.
The meeting are now open for business, which is for nominees of a permanent chairman.
At that time, I didn't know even how to open a meeting, you know. Stokely Carmichael was standing right side of me, and he told me that you have to say, now this meeting is open, you know, and I said, now this meeting is open. And then he said, the first order of business would be to elect a permanent chair. And I said, the first order of business would be to elect a permanent chair. And, you know, it was just great being there.
It has been moved and second that the nomination be closed. It is closed. Isn't that right? Huh? We are now to take a vote. Now, who was the first name? Give me the name. Who?
During that summer of 1964, 80,000 people registered in the Freedom Democratic Party. In early August, in Jackson, the party held its state convention to choose delegates to the national convention in Atlantic City.
Will the delegates please be seated? The state convention for the Freedom Democratic Party is now in session.
When the state convention occurred, there was enormous pride.
Ed King was a minister at the all-black Tougaloo College in Jackson and one of a handful of whites who were part of the Freedom Democrats.
People had little banners, little, you know, placards for Jackson County and Itawamba County and different things like that. We set it up like a convention hall.
We're going to ask Ms. Hamer to come back to the mic and lead us in this little light of mine. And as we're doing that, let's find our way to our seats, okay?
I've never been at a meeting before that this song, This Little Light of Mine, meant as much to me as it means today. And this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light, my Lord, I'm gonna let it shine.
Despite the euphoria, there was a shadow over the state convention. The day before it began, the bodies of Andrew Goodman, James Cheney, and Michael Schwerner, three civil rights activists who had been missing since the start of the summer, were found buried in an earthen dam in Neshoba County. Ed King.
So the reality was pushed back on us. And even with their excitement, people knew that every person who was a delegate there, 600, 800, 900 people there, was very visible. And anybody who dared go to Atlantic City was risking their life.
What was that like for you, to know that you were going as a delegate from the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party to the party convention in Atlantic City, New Jersey, that summer?
You didn't know. I didn't know what I was involved in.
You need a Blackwell.
I didn't know what politics was, in what we were going to do even. We had never been out of Mississippi or anywhere, and so we didn't know. They called us a bunch of ignorant field hands that didn't know anything. But we just was going, as Ms. Hamer, Fannie Lou Hamer, used to say, we're going and tell it. And that's what we were going to do. We're going to tell it, and that felt good.
The big show isn't in convention hall as the Democrats go into conclave to nominate Lyndon Baines Johnson and his running mate for the presidential race this fall.
The Freedom Democrats who came to Atlantic City knew nothing of backroom politics. They entered this political arena armed only with an unquenchable belief in the rightness of their cause. Surely, they thought, when the National Party hears the story of their struggle for the vote, surely it will do what is right and give the Freedom Democrats the official seats on the floor of the convention. There were political realists in the group who knew the delegation might not get its way. But political realism was not what the Freedom Democrats were all about. They traveled together by bus from Mississippi, challenged en route by Klansmen who tried to stop their journey. They stayed together at a small segregated hotel in Atlantic City. They shared their food and their money. The unity of the delegation, says Bob Moses, became a crucial issue when he and other leaders began talks with Democratic Party officials.
The decision-making power at that convention lay in the hands of the whole delegation. And what we said is that people have come up here from Mississippi. They don't have anything to do but time to meet. That's what they came up here for. They can meet all day and all night if it takes that. And so if it's a question of a critical decision, then it has to be referred to the whole delegation, and they've got to figure it out, because that was the political process which empowered the people.
The delegation arrived in Atlantic City on Friday. The convention's credentials committee had agreed to hear their case the next day. Joseph Rao, an influential liberal Democrat and a member of the credentials committee, introduced the speakers.
I have only an hour to tell you a story of terror and tragedy in Mississippi. In this hour, I shall show you that the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party is the loyal, legal, and long-suffering body of Mississippi. The first witness is the chairman of our delegation, Mr. Aaron Henry.
Mr. Chairman, and members of the Credentials Committee of the National Democratic Party. The position of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party is clearly identified on the side of the National Democratic Party. We are willing to work with all loyal Democrats in the state of Mississippi who will work for the election of President Lyndon Johnson.
We, you know, took a very bold position that once we get the right to vote, we won't bother you no more. We can handle it by ourselves. But that's not really the case. But that's what we told them. Anyhow. That's what we thought, too.
I have returned to Mississippi and am working for a free society in Mississippi and hope to work through the Democratic Party for that society. There are not many white people openly working this way in Mississippi.
We have our effort was to get arouse attention with the hearing and then to have a floor fight. We felt everything we were asking for was right.
We maintain that the regular Democratic Party for Mississippi does not represent you and your interest. This is the party which tolerates violence, church burnings, and murder as the ultimate weapon to prevent Negro voting. This is the party.
One by one, they told the story of the struggle to win the right to vote in the state of Mississippi. It was a compelling presentation, carried live on national television. President Johnson watched the proceedings from the White House. The most electrifying moment came when Fannie Lou Hamer got up to speak. Hamer, more than anyone, spoke for the sharecroppers and field hands who made up the majority of the Freedom Party. Her plea to the committee was honest, direct, and emotionally charged.
If the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America. Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to sleep with our telephones off of the hook? Because our lives be threatened daily, because we want to live as decent human beings in America.
We will return to this scene in Atlantic City, but now we switch to the White House and NBC's Robert Goralski.
The President of the United States called a White House press conference. Deliberately, we were told, and I've heard it many places since, to get her off the air.
Ed King.
But they taped it. So it was a Saturday afternoon, set up as dead as time as they could find, but the tapes of Mrs. Hamer's comments particularly were played that night and again on Sunday. The response was enormous American response of people telephoning and telegramming their delegates. We want something done for these people.
The hearing on Saturday before the Credentials Committee was the high point of the convention for the Freedom Democratic Party. We had it.
Joseph Rao.
We had won the moral side. We'd won the feelings of the people. There wasn't any question that everybody was on our side. But then you don't reckon with what happened the next day.
What had to be reckoned with was the power of the president. Lyndon Johnson was furious. He wanted a trouble-free convention that would pave the way for a major victory in the fall election. He was afraid Southern Democrats might defect to Barry Goldwater, and he was determined to maintain their support. Hubert Humphrey, who desperately wanted to be Johnson's vice president, was told to resolve the conflict. Humphrey, working with his political protege, Walter Mondale, a member of the Credentials Committee, offered the Freedom Democrats a compromise. The regular Mississippi Democrats would have to sign a loyalty oath to Lyndon Johnson in order to be seated. The Freedom Democrats would be given two seats at large, one for Aaron Henry and the other for Ed King. They would also be given a promise that the rules would be changed to ensure that blacks would be fairly represented in the next convention. But the Freedom Party was not interested in that compromise. Humphrey began talking with the leaders of the Freedom delegation, Ed King.
We were having meetings with Humphrey. He was sort of doing it for the White House, very clear that he could not become vice president unless he could control this situation. The pressure got so great on him, he tried to explain to Mrs. Hamer that she didn't know what was at stake, and he elaborated the war in Vietnam, poverty, the entire liberal agenda, health care, education, socialized medicine, as what we had to have to meet the needs of this country, that all of this kind of stuff was at stake, and that he had to find a way to make us compromise, or he would never be able to influence Lyndon Johnson and the party And this was the great chance the liberals had been waiting for since the New Deal. And she said, Senator Humphrey, if you believe in these things and you become vice president by doing away with what you believe in on race, you will never be able to do any good on any of these other things that you believe in. Senator Humphrey, I'm going to have to pray to Jesus for you.
This was a kind of politics that Hubert Humphrey had never experienced, but the stakes were high, and Humphrey knew the time had come to call in the heavy ammunition. On Tuesday, he called another meeting at his hotel suite. Aaron Henry, Ed King, and Bob Moses were invited. Well-known civil rights leaders, including Dr. Martin Luther King, were also there, along with Walter Reuther, president of the United Auto Workers Union, a major contributor to the civil rights movement. The leaders of that movement knew that future funding and support from the Democratic Party were at stake. They urged the Freedom Democrats to accept the compromise. To turn it down and get nothing, they argued, would be a serious defeat for the civil rights movement. The leaders of the Freedom Democrats tried to explain that the members of the delegation would not accept a compromise that gave the party only two seats, especially if Fannie Lou Hamer was excluded. Aaron Henry.
We had all sacrificed the same. You know, we'd all eaten soda crackers and drank Coca-Colas from Mississippi to New Jersey. We were sleeping five and six in a bed and eight and ten on the floor. And for him to say to me and Ed King, you're the only two that can have this privilege, was just negative toward all of what we were after.
One significant player who was not invited to this meeting was Joseph Rao, the Freedom Democrats' legal counsel, who also just happened to be an employee of Walter Reuther at the UAW. Rao was at a credentials committee hearing where a vote was expected on the Mississippi challenge. Reuther reached him by phone and ordered him to tell the credentials committee that the Freedom Democrats had accepted the compromise. Rao refused, saying he could not make the decision for the delegation. Reuther replied, "The convention has made its decision." Rao wanted to meet with the Freedom Democrats to find out what was happening. He appealed to Walter Mondale to delay any action on the issue.
I stopped Fritz, told him about the Reuther conversation, and said, give me time. What do you say? Well, here, a little punk standing next to him, who was at this moment calling the shots for Johnson with Fritz, says, no, sir. This guy's running it on Fritz. He says, no, sir, we can't do that. The convention has made his decision, which I suppose is Johnson and the rest of the important people. So Fritz says, Joe, that's it.
Back at the hotel suite, Ed King was proposing a new compromise. He thought some progress was being made in the discussion.
At which point, an aide rushed into the room and said, Senator Humphrey, you've got to see television. And he ran to the door of the adjacent room, and Mondale was announcing that the compromise had been accepted.
It may not satisfy everybody, the extremes on the right or the extremes on the left, but we think it is a just compromise. We think it is based soundly on the law. And we think it represents and sets the stage for the overwhelming victory of the man who more than anybody else in the world represents the cause of justice and law today, President Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Once Mondale had announced that compromise, what happened next?
Sort of pandemonium.
Ed King.
Humphrey and some of his aides, to me, were visibly surprised and upset. I felt Humphrey was trying to apologize to me and to Moses and to Aaron Henry. Moses was so upset, he criticized the senator and the others in the room, sort of said, like, you've just been stalling to hold us, I need to be with the people, and slammed the door, literally, in Humphrey's face and ran from the room.
I guess I was furious.
Bob Moses.
It was, I guess, the final sort of sledgehammer to say there's no way around in this party structure. You were looking for one point in the party, some one person that could say, no, here's what's right. hears what's not only right in this situation, he hears what's right for the country. And I learned that there wasn't this fiber in the Democratic Party apparatus there. When the crunch came down, you couldn't find it.
The rest of the Freedom Democrats did not understand how a decision could have been made without them. They felt betrayed by the Democratic Party and by their own leaders. Bob Moses tried to explain as much as he knew about what had happened. Finally, the Freedom Democrats decided to take a vote anyway, and the compromise was rejected. Fannie Lou Hamer and Ed King met with the press to inform them of the delegation's decision.
Mrs. Hamer, how do you feel about this?
In coming to this national convention, one of the reasons that we stand up to not compromise, we are tired of tokenism in the state of Mississippi, and we didn't come here for tokenism, and, you know, I feel all right about it, but we still didn't want just two votes.
Dr. King, you feel that the president had a hand in trying to bring pressure to bear on your accepting this modified program?
I think the president of the United States has a heavy hand.
What do you mean by that? You mean he played a big role, or would you amplify on that statement?
We have had no direct contact with the President of the United States. Down in Mississippi, we hardly know that we have a President of the United States. We've become more aware of the President of the United States here in Atlantic City. We hope he has become aware of us. We will work for his reelection. We hope he will work for our freedom.
In the end, no one represented Mississippi at the Democratic Convention that year. Most of the regular delegation also rejected the compromise and walked out. The Freedom Democrats, using credentials given to them by sympathetic delegates from other states, snuck into the convention hall and held a sit-in.
Six members of the delegation have entered, are standing in front of the Mississippi delegation, and are holding up signs saying, "One man, one vote, Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party."
The sit-in provided a diversion and demonstrated the delegation's opposition to the previously announced compromise, but it did not bring a halt to the convention. Lyndon Johnson was nominated for president, as expected. He chose Hubert Humphrey as his running mate, as expected, and the two won a huge victory over Barry Goldwater in the November election. But although no one really understood it at the time, says Joseph Rao, Democratic Party politics were changed forever by the challenge of 1964.
If you come back now, at the end of the road here, and you look at the Democratic Party, and you see the degree to which the minorities are entwined with them, that's where it started, and the party did make good its promise to the Freedom Party that there'd never be another segregated crowd, and there hasn't been. They lived up to it, and I really think when people say who won, and you argue over that, the real proof of who won was when Aaron and Fannie Lou led the delegation in 1968, 4 years later. I mean, Fannie Lou was vindicated before her death.
For Bob Moses, who had worked long and hard to register black voters in Mississippi, the challenge was not simply a question of winning or losing. It was a question of right and wrong, and the Democrats made the wrong choice.
What the Democratic Party lost, and this could only be seen over the years, they lost a moral cutting edge around politics. And I think it really played itself out in front of our eyes over the next decade with the explosion in the urban cities, because if there was some real vision there, we could have come out of that convention with something which you could have taken to cities and you could have said to people, look, here's a party which has committed itself to black people, right, out front, upright, let's go with them. Here's a political way out of this situation, right? Take that, not rebelling in the streets.
Bob Moses left the civil rights movement shortly after the 1964 convention. After living in Africa for many years, he returned to the United States and is now working as an educator in Massachusetts. Aaron Henry is a state legislator in Mississippi. Unita Blackwell is the mayor of Myersville, Mississippi, and Ed King teaches at the University of Mississippi. Fannie Lou Hamer died of cancer in 1977, and Joseph Rao is retired and living in Washington, D.C. The Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party was produced by Dan Collison and edited by Gary Covino. Thanks also to the Pacifica and NBC Archives.